Hello and welcome to another podcast in our hugely important series, Coronavirus, The Resilient Response, conversations with the director and founder of the Resilience Centre, Lynn Worsley. I'm Lee Hatcher. In our last conversation, we covered the brutal facts of what's ahead in this global pandemic. There are five stages. Now, preparing for the stages ahead. I'm a pragmatist at heart, which means I can't wait for this conversation, in which we look at preparing our thinking, the way we act, and a whole lot of day-to-day practical tips, especially as so many of us are living at pretty close quarters, and as with this conversation, connecting on Zoom.
From the last episode, we had many people wanting to know more about each of the stages. A lot of listeners have commented on the usefulness of the graph which outlined the five stages of the virus. And some people were using the graph to consider the changes they might need to make in their workplaces and their households. So this week, I thought I'd go through where we're up to now and perhaps talk through some of the psychological responses people are having and maybe even give some alternative and resilient responses that we can have based on past research.
Yes, I think certainly considering the speed with which all this is happening. But I think it's worth, just for a moment, covering each of the stages again for the uninitiated that you gave us. Give us a brief outline of each of those stages. I think that'd be really helpful.
First of all, if you can imagine the graph and visualize a line at the bottom of the axis that starts to increase gradually, well, that's like stage one, where the infection rate starts to just gradually change, not too much. And then suddenly, it takes a sharp turn upwards to the top of the axis. Now that's stage two. So we've got two stages, one where the graph is really low and takes a very slight change, and then stage two where it goes dramatically up to the top of the axis. Then it levels off at the top of the axis and looks a bit like a straight line. That's stage three. Then it gradually declines in stage four, and then to the lower part of the axis again, stage five.
Okay, so take us back to stage one. You call that the prepare stage.
Yes, so stage one, we're sort of getting a slight increase of cases and we begin to prepare. And during this time, people either deny that it's happening and say, oh, it'll blow over, it won't happen, but they buy lots of toilet paper just in case.
Seen that, yes.
And stage two, we call the infection stage. So during that stage, we have an increase in infections, sometimes doubling every couple of days. And during that stage, we put in place contact restrictions. We shut down our workplaces, for example. We change how we socially connect with the aim, of course, to reduce the rate of infection and slow the virus down. Stage three, we call the sickness stage. Now, remember, that's the one at the top of the axis where it's sort of flatlining.
Yep.
And that's where we see many people who are very sick. Most of us would get to know someone who's sick or would may know someone who has actually died from the illness. And that becomes a very fearful place for us. The hospitals and the facilities are overworked and many staff get sick. And the most common reaction we get is shock and fear, as I've said, with many people finally obeying the rules to stay home. Stage four is where there's a decline in the rate of infections, but people are still dying because they're the ones that have been in hospital during stage three. And stage four, we have less infections, but those people who've been in hospital very ill, increasing death rate happens at that time. So we call it the recovery stage, but it doesn't actually feel like recovery because we still get shocked by the number of deaths. And gradually, here, the restrictions on our contacts can be relaxed a bit. Usually in that stage, it's a little bit of a disbelief. Are you sure? Are you sure we can go out now?
Yes.
And in stage five, it's the rebuilding stage, when the rate of infections are very low and the recovery rates are increasing. So during that stage, people are just absolutely exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to start all over again with their business, with their work, and their life.
Because we don't really know what's ahead, there may be several stages of these five stages, do you think, as it starts to kind of dissipate and then rise again?
So again, we need to be aware that at any time the infection rate could increase again until we get rid of the virus completely or have some sort of immunity. We need to be aware that we could go back to stage two at any point.
Yeah. So what stage do you think we're at the moment? It would seem to me we're through the prepare stage as it stands.
Yes. If we look at the curve and the rate of infections, we're in stage two. But the reactions of many people around us by still going to the beach and gathering in public places might just indicate they think we're still in stage one.
Get with the program.
Yeah, but we are in the infection stage. Yeah. Because of the contract restrictions, the virus has been slowed down for now and perhaps will be in stage two for a lot longer than the other countries.
What are the characteristics of a stage two?
This is where the stage where we're imposed lockdown. And the psychological reactions that people are having are a result of losing the life that they knew. We also have huge economical implications, which become the focus during this stage. So during this stage, there's disbelief, there's devastation, there's confusion, and there's a chance, I guess, to try and adapt to the new changes.
Yeah.
Those who are adaptable seem to take on a challenge, but those who are not, they really struggle.
So I think we're watching this stage unfold now, parents having to homeschool their children while working from home, juggling their responsibilities. This is very stressful for an awful lot of people.
You bet. So stressful.
So what can we do about it to relieve that stress, relieve that fear?
Okay, let's get really practical. First up, if we're in a leadership position, and most of us are in a leadership position in our own homes.
Yes.
And with our families. So what we can do is that we can lead well. And if we lead well, what we do then is that during stage one and two, we plan for the best case scenario in stage five.
That's a critical point.
That is an absolute critical point because it's quite counterintuitive. Because at the moment, all we want to do is think about what's happening to us now in our own economic changes. But if we actually think in terms of what will be happening in stage five. So, for example, what if everything is going to be digitalized in stage five? When the virus is over, what if schools are all online? What if our workplaces are all from home? What if we have situations where all of us are having to be so much more connected online than ever before? That would mean that right now, in planning in stages one or two, we prepare to be the best online people that we possibly can.
Good point.
And that might mean we'd need to consider other people in that process. So, for example, for us in the practice, there may be some people who don't want to do online counselling or online therapy or online teaching. But part of considering their needs into the future is to upskill them in how to use the online platforms that will help them to communicate with other people. So it's not necessarily about responding to the right here and now. It's about responding to what they might need in stage five. So, for example, the elderly people in our community. They're going to need to have the ability to use the mobile phones, to look up Google, to be able to have good internet that enables them to be able to reach out to their grandchildren at some point. And in stage five, everyone will be communicating this way. So unless our grandparents are upskilled during this time, they're going to be left behind and perhaps even in a very dangerous situation.
So maybe the best thing the kids of those grandparents can do is buy them a good webcam, teach them how to operate Zoom or Skype, and get some decent gear and get them online more.
Yes. And how wonderful it is for students, our young kids, to actually consider how the grandparents think, to be able to teach them how to use the tools. It might be really frustrating to teach an older person how to use a mobile phone. But at the same time, the skill of teaching involves the person who's teaching to get into that grandparent's head or that older person's head to understand how they think. Now, that's what we would call a moral development shift. That means that the child has to learn how another person thinks and change how they talk to them about things to enable them to learn. This is a wonderful opportunity.
Yes, sure is.
A wonderful opportunity for our young people to develop morally, to be able to reach out.
Yeah.
And also for ourselves.
So seeing we're being practical, I'd like to know a few household tips from you. Can I offer one from our point of view? We've just come back from delivering a care package to some of our grandkids and our kids. My wife makes the best meatballs possible, and delivered them. We were 5 minutes away on the way home, and they said that they'd eaten six already, and they want to know the recipe. So I said, well, let's get on Zoom later this week, and we'll cook, and we'll show you, we'll get set. And all these creative, practical things around the house, again online, are really starting to take off.
Oh, that is beautiful. And in that process, you're learning, they're learning, and it's what we would call social navigation and negotiation. And that's essentially what resilience is about.
Yes.
Resilience is about learning how to navigate and negotiate in the environment that we have now with the resources that we have now.
Yeah.
And you're learning and they're learning, and we're exchanging recipes, which probably are age-old recipes that she's used for a long time that have some sort of a history or a story.
She's very creative. It just comes out of her head. So now she has the challenge of writing it down and specifying it. So what else practically can we do around the house that's going to get us through this time, Lynn?
Okay, so just some household tips. During this time, just in stage two, we need to set up some systems. Some systems that are really, really helpful that enable us to stay well. And we can talk about this in another podcast as well, some more tips.
Yep.
Just some basic tips at the moment. We know routines work. Routines work really well. And in terms of our research, in terms of people who have been resilient in times that are really difficult, like war zones and so on, if they have a routine that they can maintain some sort of predictability, it's helpful.
Yep.
However, rhythms work better. Mm. When we talk about a rhythm, it's not like a two-dimensional routine where we just do one thing after the other. But a rhythm is almost like a wavy line of things that we can do that are upbeat versus things that are a bit calming. So it might be that you have a rhythm where you go out in the morning and you go for a run, or you do some exercise at home in your unit. And then you have a time where you just have a zone which is quiet and meditative. It might be then that you start doing a work zone. And in your work zone, you're working really hard, and then you have another rhythm, which means you go out and you do something different.
So I'm not locked into a routine like I'm going to run between this time and that time and then I must do this.
It's almost like setting up a routine with a third dimension.
Yeah, okay.
The routine is a two-dimensional thing. But a rhythm is a third dimension. A rhythm means some is upbeat, some is calming. And so the way you can do that is actually set up some house zones. You have a work zone and you stay in your work zone for work. You might have a reading nook where you sit there and you've got the book that you're wanting to read with the light on. You might then have a music corner where you've got the speaker there sitting ready to play the music that you really want to do. You might also have a phone call spot which might be sitting out on your veranda talking to someone. But each of those have got their own rhythm. You're not upbeat all the time, not lazing in bed all the time. You actually have some sort of interesting spaces.
That's gold.
And remember too, your house is not going to be home beautiful now. Nobody's going to come and visit anyway.
No.
So set it up in functional spaces. Make your functional spaces like zones for your rhythm.
I've never worn my UGG boots more around the house, and I love it.
The other thing too is in your household, set up alarms and schedulers and sync the calendars with your family so that people know what you're doing. Because it might look like you're doing nothing and you're just sitting on the computer, but if the other people in the household know that you've had a number of calls, this is the time to interrupt you, this is not the time to interrupt you, and they can see it in their calendar, and it also inspires them to do some things as well.
Yeah.
And it might be that they schedule that they're going to do some gardening, or they might schedule that they're going to clean the windows. But it may be that that schedule then becomes a something you can talk about at the end of the day.
Mm.
And in the alarms and schedules, you put down when your lunch is, you have a lunch break, and you have a morning tea break, and you have an end of the day break. And when you finish the day, it's really good to do something nice or something different. Talking to my son in London, he said, we have a small unit and we have it set up like an office during the day. But at the end of the day, we pack everything up, we put everything in a corner and we turn it back into a lounge room. And we get our slippers on then and we sit down and we might play a board game or play cards together or do the jigsaw puzzle that we've just put to one side. And it's interesting because that then makes it we've got a rhythm and a different rhythm that we would have normally, but it gives us a sense of, yes, I can calm down, I'm in a different space and I'm able to relate to my family now.
Gosh, there's so much wisdom in this. I reckon we could do a whole another podcast on household tips. They're just gold, Lynn Worsley. Thank you so much indeed. And we'll keep going with the tips and the stages of where we're heading in coming podcasts. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us.
Thanks, Lee.
You've been listening to another podcast in our series, Coronavirus, The Resilient Response. I'm Lee Hatcher. You'll find our other podcasts in this series and so many other great resources at this website, www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.